All right, Ingrid, it's 3 minutes after four. So why don't we start the roll call, and hopefully by the time we get to votes, we'll have quorum, and that won't be a problem for us.
Okay.
So good
All right.
afternoon, everyone, and welcome. Happy post-Labor Day. Temperature's starting to drop off. It's hard to believe. I think we last met in early June, so I hope everyone had a good summer. We have a couple of items on our agenda today that we're excited to go through with you all. Just to kick things off, I just want to turn it over to Ingrid to do the roll call to make sure we have quorum for today's meeting.
Okay, thank you, Lori. I'm just going through the list again. So we have Eileen Lucy from Toronto Board of Trade. We have Badara Shaman from the Brampton Board of Trade. And this is just in alphabetical order as I see it on my teams. We have Alessandra Biacci from Ministry of Transportation. We have Brad Butt from Mississauga Board of Trade, Christopher Brodkin from Transport Canada, Amanda Chum from Transport Canada. We have Daryl Shipp. He's our City of Mississauga resident representative. And we have Sabir Syed. He's from Peel Region. Stephen Tufts, the Brampton Mississauga District Labor Council. Bram Westfall is also from the Ministry of Transportation. And Jonathan Weedle, who is from York Region. And I think 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 7. We're at 8 for a quorum. There's a few more people on our that are attending. We have Todd Ernst. He is one of our presenters. He is the Director of Aviation Infrastructure, Energy and Environment from the GTAA. We also have Craig Rutten, apologize if I pronounce that wrong, Policy Director from the Toronto Region Board of Trade. And we have Dwayne McIntosh, Director of Corporate Safety and Security. And look. Oh, I didn't mention Rachel Treadgold. She is here on behalf of the Ministry of Tourism. And Fares Khoury, he is the coordinator for our public affairs team. And am I missing anybody, Laura? I don't think so.
Sorry, oh, I think you've gone through everyone. Does
oh,
that
I do
mean
see.
We have quorum?
No, it looks like we're short by one.
Okay. All right. So we may have to come back to approval of agendas in minutes, but let's get started, though, in the interest of everyone's time. I'll hold off on our item 1.2, which is approval of today's agenda. We have two presentations. We also have the minutes from June the 7th and matters arising. So why don't we go to item 2.0? So that's our consultative committee update. And Therese, I'll turn that over to you to lead us through that update, please.
Thanks, Laurie. I hope some of you had the chance to read the Consultative Committee newsletter that went out last Friday on September 9th. There were a couple of articles that stand for me. The first one would be the Toronto Pearson International Airport in partnership with the Public Health Agency of Canada. And three Ontario universities have launched a first of its kind pilot program to monitor the wastewater at Canada's largest airport as a means of detecting new COVID variants as they enter the country. This is done by collecting wastewater from planes and airport restrooms at the busiest ports of entry into the country. This program also aims to test for COVID-19 with the added benefits of being both affordable and non-invasive to travelers. In addition, this data collected can aid the Public Health Agency of Canada in making policy decisions about how to respond to new virus variants. There's also an article that talks about the new infographics to support the passenger experience, which can be found on the Toronto Pearson website. The infographics are intended to clear up any confusion about who does what in the airport space and what's being done to address delays and, of course, better the passenger experience. Another article mentions the GTAA submission to the Prime Minister's Task Force to Improve Government Services for Canadians. This submission is meant to further address systemic operational issues at our airports and build on the successful work done by Canadian airports, industry partners, and the Government of Canada over the past few months to address service delays. And finally, I'd encourage you to read the opinion pieces linked in the newsletter that address the opportunity to invest in airport infrastructure and the way tech is transforming the airport experience. And I should also mention that we have a new Vice President of Stakeholder Relations and Communications at the GTAA, Karen Mazurkiewicz. Her bio is available in the newsletter as well. We're really pleased to have Karen on board and at the helm as we rebound from COVID. These are the articles that stand out for me, but I do encourage everyone to take a look at all the newsletter content. Thank you for your time.
Great. Thanks very much, Perez, for the overview. If anyone had any questions of us in terms of just general sort of operational update, I know Jonathan was asking me at the outset as we were talking just how things are going at the airport. Obviously, as I said, it was, you know, easier to shut a sector down than it's been to stand it up again. And many of the delays and cancellations that we were seeing in May and June, and the crisis of all that has resolved itself. And it's really the hard work of many in the sector across government in terms of dealing with some of the workforce challenges, investments in some infrastructure, and some process changes related to some of the COVID measures that had been still in place. As Perez mentioned, what we're really doing now is turning our minds to some of those systemic challenges that, you know, are opportunities to leapfrog either from a technology perspective or to change policy or in some cases legislation to help support moving the airport ahead in terms of that touchless, faster processing time that we're all looking for as we travel. And so that was what formed the submission that we made to the Prime Minister's Task Force. So we'll make sure that a copy of that is circulated to the committee as well. If there's any questions for Perez or for me, I'll just open the floor right now.
Sorry,
if not,
we do.
Ingrid, I just want to see, do we have quorum now? I see that.
Yes, Shane popped in, so we do have quorum.
Hi, Shane. Welcome to the meeting.
Yeah, sorry for being late.
That's okay. You got here just in time. So what I'll do now is I will go back to our items on procedural items.
I apologize.
So we are amending the agenda just slightly in terms of presenters for the first item. So the first item will be presented a combination of Michael Mendel and Dwayne McIntosh. And then we do have also a presentation which is being shared from the Toronto Region Board of Trade. And as Ingrid mentioned at the outset, our colleague Todd Ernst is joining us as well, and he's leading the project from a GTA perspective. So Todd's at the meeting today as well. So just wanted to note that. So if I could ask for a motion to approve today's agenda, please. And I'm going to ask if any opposed speak up because I can't see everyone's face. I'm going to assume that is approved then. Thank you. The minutes were circulated with today's agenda, so the minutes were from June the 7th. If I can ask for a motion to approve. Sorry, you know what? I better go back, Ingrid. I didn't actually get the motion and the seconder. Jonathan, I saw your hand go up as a mover, and Brad, I saw your hand as a seconder. So if we can note those, please. Sorry about that. I'm getting too quick here. And so all those in favor of the agenda today? Any opposed? Thank you. I'll do this better with the minutes. All right, so the June 7th, any discussion related to the minutes that were circulated from June the 7th? If not, then I'll ask for someone to move the minutes from June the 7th.
Maybe Lori, I can move, Sabir.
Thank you, Sabir, and a seconder, please. All right, Brad, thank you. All those in favor of the June 7th minutes? Any opposed? Thank you. I know these are a bit tedious, but they're part of the official part of this. All right, so then we're going to, we had one item that was arising for our minutes. We did send out a survey. What we'll do is we're collecting the feedback received from committee members, and we'll circulate that feedback for our next meeting. So that moves us to our discussion items, item 3.1. So Michael, I will turn it over to you and Dwayne to lead us through the next presentation.
Perfect. Thanks, Lori. I'll just bring it up on my screen here. Give me 1 second. I see Dwayne on camera there. He's ready. Just give me one. Can everyone see that okay?
If you can just go into presentation mode, please.
Yes. I'm there on my screen. Maybe it hasn't caught up. Has it caught up for others?
It just caught up for me. Thanks, Michael.
Okay. I'll turn off my camera. Yeah. So, I think Lori and Ferez gave some really helpful context off the top. As the air industry continues to rebound, I thought it'd be helpful to just remind the committee of Toronto Pearson's economic contribution pre-pandemic. And so as we think about, and we often talk about building back better, it's how do we get back to Pearson as, you know, that was by far Canada's largest airport, a 50 million passenger airport, the anchor institution at the heart of Canada's second largest employment zone. And you see some of the, you know, related economic benefits here. So that's where we're headed. And then as we continue to grow the airport in a thoughtful and considered way, that fulfills the airport's economic development mandate and is mindful of the impacts of growth on surrounding communities. So I think that's some helpful context, hopefully off the top of the presentation. Just give me a second and see if I can advance the slides here. I think it's fair to say everyone at the committee at this point has either toured the airport or traveled through it. And, you know, when it's done right, I like to say it's like choreography. There's 400 plus organizations operating at Toronto Pearson and our aviation partners working hard every day to improve the passenger experience. We all read the newspapers and are familiar with some of the operational challenges and delays Pearson has been experiencing. And as we looked, and I think Lori had a good analogy off the top, it's like turning the light switch back on when it's almost overnight, when it's been off for a matter of years. Quite frankly, it's really difficult to do that, especially in the face of unprecedented travel demand. Air traffic, you can see here, air traffic has rebounded incredibly quickly. In Q1 2022, passenger traffic was up 400% as an example. And we're continuing to see passenger traffic above those percentages and numbers. And of course, so the GTA is doing its part. And I'll expand on that in some subsequent slides. We're doing our part along with our partners to ensure passengers have the best experience possible when they're at Pearson. I think a fact that sometimes gets missed is the GTA proper represents 3% of the total workforce at Toronto Pearson. So it really is a partnership with many of the organizations listed at the bottom of the slide. So the good news is, and again, Lori mentioned it off the top, things are getting better at Toronto Pearson, and that's reflected in the feedback that we're hearing from our passengers. Government agencies and terminal have staffed up and continue to address labor shortages. We continue to see the benefits of moving random testing and the selection of who is randomly tested. That's been moved out of the airport. And while ArriveCan has had its fair share of criticism, particularly in the coupling of digital border processes with COVID and health-related questions, ArriveCan has digitized parts of the travel process, like the advanced declaration, that are reducing passenger dwell times at kiosks and in the customs hall, and transaction times are down to 40 seconds from 2 minutes with the use of e-gates. So that's a 66% efficiency improvement, and something that's noted when you think about the thousands of passengers traveling through the airport and through international arrivals every day, that the benefit of that can't be understated. So you can see here, last point, millions of dollars spent by the GTAA investing in e-gates, new kiosks, and enhanced space for international students to be processed outside of the main customs hall. And all of that is making a difference. There are ongoing operational pressure points we should note, and chief among them, I would say, are the ongoing wait times of an hour plus at U.S. Customs at Toronto Pearson. Maybe some of you experienced that in your last time through the airport if you're traveling to the States. Simply put, we need more U.S. Customs officers. Toronto Pearson is the only Canadian airport that remains below pre-pandemic staffing complement of U.S. Customs officers and below our traditional hours of operation, which have been cut by 30 minutes at either end of the day. Additionally, the federal government needs to reopen Nexus enrollment centers in Canada to facilitate seamless travel across the Canada-U.S. border and address, there's a 300,000 plus backlog of Canadians waiting for Nexus cards. So in the short term, while that's happening, we'd recommend, you know, there are efficient ways as the enrollment centers come back online, could we be doing things like video interviews or enrollment on arrival to address the huge backlog of applicants? So I won't go through this slide or clear the entire slide, but I think it's important to focus on the bit in red there. And finally, I think it's fair to say that there are many people at the airport who are hopeful that we've turned a corner on COVID and we start to think ahead. So what does winter 2022 look like? What does summer of next year look like? How can we be creating the airport of the future, right? So that's all the things you see on the slide here. Creating a more digital border process. So those low touch solutions that get people to and through the airport quicker. I talked about the processing of international students, launching a trusted traveler pilot. So how can we have a true Canadian trusted traveler pilot the same way as you would kind of in the States when you go through TSA pre-check? Right now, if you have a Nexus card, in Canada, there's a dedicated line, but you're not seeing any different treatment than if you were going through or being processed as a regular passenger. We talked about USCBP resources. There is on the rake ready pool of workers. So you need a restricted area ID to work at the airport. That takes time. There is an ongoing labor shortage at the airport, and there's good jobs available. So how can we create, in partnership with the province, with the federal government, a rake ready pool of workers so that we're not seeing a huge gap between jobs being available and people being able to work in those jobs, is what it comes down to. And then finally, the committee's heard from us previously about transit funding. So really thankful that the province and the federal government have come through with study funding for the next phase of planning and design work on the Eglinton Crosstown West extension. And now we need the capital funding to build the airport segment in line with the Toronto segment. Otherwise, you run the risk of the line, it's going to dead end at Renforth, and hopefully not for a period. I mean, we run the risk of that happening for a few years, and we'd like the line just to extend and connect to the airport as the Toronto segment gets built. And we've asked the federal government to invest airport rent. We pay rent based on our revenues every year to the federal government, and we're saying let's flow that back into airports and make the investment and transformational capital programs and infrastructure that's needed. We've all seen that it's needed at airports. So calling on the federal government to reinvest that airport rent. So with that, I will turn it over to my colleague, Dwayne McIntosh, he's the GTA's Director of Corporate Safety and Security. I'd say we're really lucky to get a bit of his time. You can imagine what Dwayne's life has been like running safety and security at Pearson during the pandemic. And Dwayne's going to walk you through a series of slides that detail how Toronto Pearson, how we've acted on our healthy airport commitment and how we're positioned to be a thought leader in health and infectious disease in that space as we continue to lead and leverage technology and innovation in creating the airport of the future. So over to Dwayne.
Thanks, Michael. I got nothing to follow that up. I appreciate the kind words. I mean, it's really a pleasure to be here to talk to you guys about Healthy Airport. You know, I would say right from the beginning of the pandemic, Toronto Pearson really took a leadership role in how do we create opportunities to ensure the safety of our passengers and our staff. And that has been the motto that we followed right from the beginning, and we continue to do so today. So a lot of the stuff we're going to talk about is really led from that position that we took right from day one on taking a leadership stance. The reality behind it all is, you know, there was a lot of unknowns at the beginning of COVID, which, you know, we didn't know how it transmitted. We didn't know if it was a surface thing. We didn't know if it was an air thing. Of course, we've learned a lot since. But we do know that everything that we've done from the beginning to today has really led us to ensuring that we can't do the same thing over again. You know, when we look forward, if through other infectious disease issues or pandemics, we do not want to have the result in restricted, stringent travel restrictions like we saw over the past couple of years. That was not fun for us and or for the aviation industry as a whole or our passengers. The one thing that we can speak to, and it's bolded on the slide, is that the airport has always followed the federal regulations. And in fact, we have always exceeded them. And the Healthy Airport model has helped us to do that. We have been leaders throughout this, and we have received awards for a healthy airport experience. We have received awards from Airport Councils International. We've received awards for the best hygiene measures in North America. And we were also recognized by World Health Organization. So again, part of this, and I just want to highlight it here, is that these are all the things that we've done to prevent or to help guide us through the pandemic and really taking that leadership stance, as I've said. But what we've always had in place is a communicable disease plan, and I don't want to leave that out because I think it's really relevant. The airport has, you know, if it was in binders, there'd be stacks and stacks of response plans that we have in place. But we do have a communicable disease plan to deal with just this. You know, when COVID entered into Toronto, we were prepared from a communicable disease perspective, but at the same time, it was much greater than that. The things that we talk about are preparedness, the things that I'll share with you from a technology perspective, the knowledge that we gained, all of that stuff happens in advance. And then our communicable disease plan is put into play if and when something lands here in Toronto. So well positioned at the beginning, and I would say that we've advanced and learned so much that we're even better positioned today to deal with this stuff in the future. So some of the stuff that we've put into play, and Michael spoke to some of it, is a wastewater pilot. You know, if you think about us at an airport, really focusing in on wastewater, you might ask, you know, why? Well, you know, less invasive ways. We do not want to bother passengers in our terminals, sticking things up their nose, causing congested lineups. With wastewater, it is a new technology. It is a proven science to work that can act as a surveillance to measure for COVID. And of course, gives us even more advanced readings because it shows up, you know, sooner than that of human testing. We've created low touch innovation from your check-in straight through to our washroom facilities. And we'll talk a little bit more about that. We implemented autonomous floor cleaners, things that we didn't have pre-pandemic, all in an effort to make sure that our terminals were cleaner than or clean enough to ensure that safety for passengers. We actually had an industrial hygienist, which is not mentioned here, come in to our facilities and do regular swabbing and do testing to ensure that our cleaning methods were exceeding the expectations that one would want. We implemented UV light for disinfection, and we had such items as a device where you could throw your phone in or your keys to disinfect it with UV lighting. We put UV lighting on our handrails for some of our moving walkways, and we'll talk about some UV lighting that we put into our HVAC systems, which allowed us to optimize air quality. We created partnerships with Blue Dot, and if you haven't heard of them, we're going to talk about that a little bit more. But they were the first ones to ever identify COVID globally. And they were able to anticipate how fast it would spread and where it would go. So, of course, it was really important to Toronto to make sure that we worked with this organization as, again, we look to what the future state of infectious diseases would be and how we could actually take a leadership position in preventing them from entering in through Toronto or into Canada at all. We hired a chief medical officer, something that we did not have in the past. And they have been an asset to us through the pandemic, so much so that, of course, at the end of the pandemic, the chief medical officer role will continue providing that advice to us. And we've been able to make, you know, more rapid, more appropriate decision-making, having them up at our side. And, of course, I already mentioned the industrial hygienist, who has provided a lot of information to us, including even where your soap or your hand cleaning dispensers are. That was sort of strategically located through the advice of our industrial hygienist. So lots has happened since the beginning of the pandemic. Lots continues to happen. But I think the overarching message in this slide really is that leadership stance that we took. Let's talk about some of the innovations. So I mentioned air quality and HVAC. From the onset of the pandemic, we knew that we had to look at our cleaning methodologies, and we had to look at HVAC. And from an HVAC perspective, in our high density areas, we actually installed ultraviolet germicidal irradiation. So basically an ultraviolet light built into our heating ventilation systems so that when air passes through, that ultraviolet light will kill any microbial bacteria, which is awesome because now as anything, as we breathe into the facility, or any bacteria or infectious disease gets into the system, it's killed before it comes back out. And we actually were able to do air quality testing at that time. And we had air quality in the terminal and still do equivalent to that of a general space in a hospital. So we're pretty impressed and proud of that. Where we are now is like, what's next for us? And you can see this indoor quality monitoring sensor system that's there. All of our building systems have a building maintenance system or building management system that measures humidity, temperature, carbon monoxide, all these things that are really relevant and standard in a system. What we want to do is we're in discussion of looking at what should we do? What could we add on to our building management system to improve the monitoring air quality? We don't have the answer today, and that's why these are sort of innovations that we're researching. But do we want to measure VOCs or volatile organic compounds, for example, which are off gases from solids or liquids? Is that important to us now? Is it money well spent, or could that money be placed elsewhere where it is an advantage, again, to the safety of our passengers and staff? So ongoing conversations on that. The active energy filtration or air filtration, you might be familiar with it. Some of you may have decided to install this on your house filter or your house furnace, excuse me. I know I did. Basically, it uses electricity, and that electricity creates positive and negative charges and pulls all of these bacteria together and catches it into the filtration system, not allowing it to come back out. We are in discussions with this company to see if we could create a trial here at Toronto Pearson in a specified location to understand whether that would work better than what we've already got in place, which is the UVGI, or whether it would be a complement in some of our other facilities. So we do know that, you know, infectious diseases, we know that COVID spreads through the air. So certainly our air quality is really important to us. And we continue to look at this from that perspective. Next slide, Michael. From innovations on health and hygiene, some additional ones. We have been talking to an Ontario tech to model a pilot for FAR UVC. And we did model out T1's customs hall, the airflow assessment to understand how UVC lamp types could work. The thing about UVC is that, you know, it's a light that will actually shine onto the surface and kill anything that's on that surface, but it needs time. And of course, we want to make sure we understand, know it works, there's tests to prove that it works, but we want to understand how that would work in our environment and the safety implications that go with it. So of course, we're not just going to go install this stuff. We continue to have conversations about it, do modeling, do trials, and then determine whether it's the right application for our facilities. We do not want to install anything that causes any safety issues for our staff and our passengers. Smart washroom pilot project, touchless features, mentioned that at the onset. We do have five male, five female, and three family washrooms where we're doing a pilot in. Everything is touchless. Paper towel, taps, toilets, everything. Soap dispensers, which is great. And I think that's the expectation as we move into the post-pandemic world. It was there pre, but certainly people feel a lot more comfortable if everything kind of dispenses on its own and they don't have to touch surfaces. The other advantage that we put into these pilots is the data that comes from these will then go to, I think it's called Lighthouse, a system that our cleaning company uses, and that system will allow them to, in real time, see what the state of those products are, whether it needs soap, whether it needs paper towel, toilet paper, how many people have been going in and out of the washroom. So smart washrooms really focusing on what the airport of the future will look like in regards to this type of tech. Next slide. Blue Dot. I did mention Blue Dot, and I want to just kind of stay here for a moment and highlight this. So Blue Dot is the organization led by Dr. Cameron Kahn, an infectious disease specialist, who wanted to build a product that could monitor in real time infectious diseases around the world and help to inform organizations such as Health Canada or the World Health Organization of what's happening. Blue Dot, again, as I mentioned, was the first to recognize that this infectious disease was breaking out in Asia, and they were able to determine how it would go, where it would go, in the first countries it would go to in Asia, and then how it would come to other parts of the world. We, as an airport, felt that it was really critical that we partner with an organization like this. We're not the health setting body, that's Health Canada, World Health Organization. But Toronto Pearson, again, wanted to make sure we had a leadership position in this and trying to help us make decisions locally. Understanding this technology, understanding how it could help us make business decisions at the airport, that was critical to us. So we signed an agreement with them. And of course, we built processes in place to track this information and, again, understand what it would do for us. During COVID, everything was the same. Everybody was coming in being treated the same. But again, it did allow us to think about future state, other infectious diseases, and monitoring those and how we would react to it. And monkeypox is an example. What we're doing with Blue Dot now is we've partnered with Particle One, they are also a partner of Blue Dot. What Particle One really does is utilizes the AI platform from Blue Dot, and it allows us as the airport to model our facility, the airspace, the physical structure, input this data, input the mitigation measures that we have put into place to prevent the spread of infectious diseases, such as the error handling system that I spoke about. And then it uses the AI technology of Blue Dot to determine what the associated risks are in our facility. And the benefit where we see this is things are changing today, right in front of our very eyes. Decisions are being made. Mitigations are being dropped. Vaccinations are not required. Masking will be dropped eventually in its entirety. There's a lot of things that are changing. This tool will help to become a guidance tool for us. It doesn't mean that risks will disappear, but it will help to provide the guidance as to how our mitigation measures and constant improvement of our environment will look and the tools that we may implement to make that better. So this is actually just going into play now. The kickoff meeting was today, and we're really excited about it to see what it can look like over the next many months. But again, taking that leadership position and how can we help inform our governments on policies and decision-making through tools like this, and other airports are now looking at it. Next slide. Another exciting piece, we talked about the wastewater testing that we are doing with Public Health Agency of Canada. But we are also doing a wastewater testing pilot of our own, and it is being funded by the National Research Council. It is pulling together three key organizations, and IRAP is a group within the NRC that helps new technology companies get their products approved and launched. And we've been able to, through pandemic, work very closely with the National Research Council, and we did a trial with them early on human testing for PCR testing in large-scale environments, such as the airport, doing a comparison against antigen tests for efficacy. And now we're bringing that technology one step forward and applying it to wastewater. So the wastewater testing that's currently happening with the province and with Public Health Agency of Canada, those test results are just, we take the collections and we give it to three main universities to do the testing. And then we wait a week or two and get these results back. What we're hoping to do with this is you've got three organizations here and their tech will help us to be able to test locally, on site, immediate results, so that we can determine how that information compares against the information that's, you know, the same in the universities, as well as sort of helping to inform whether this is a good idea or whether it's of any benefit at all. But Lumen Ultra is the same device that we use for the people testing, and now we're adopting that to wastewater testing. The benefit of this is that they now have what's called a digital drop PCR technology, so we're able to test for four different things simultaneously. And I will tell you, one of the additional items that we are testing for as part of this trial is monkeypox. So we're not just thinking about COVID. Again, we're thinking about how do we future-proof, how do we adapt from that information we would get from Blue Dot about new things that might be coming at us, and we would actually include that into our testing process here. What happens from human testing or wastewater testing when COVID is present? We don't know what variant of concern it is. We just know it's COVID. It gets sent off for genomic sequencing. We send those to laboratories. This is a first of its kind study where Fusion Genomics is going to be able to do genomic sequencing right here at the airport. So if you can picture this, we would do a wastewater sample from Terminal 1, Terminal 3, or from the triturator where all of the sewer goes from all the aircraft. We would recognize that COVID is present in that, and then we would be able to do the genomic sequencing on site immediately and know what variants exist. The benefit of that is, if we're watching information from Blue Dot and watching what's coming at us on the new types of variants, we can change what we're testing for in Lumen Ultra, and we can also adjust from our genomic sequencing and start looking for new variants to see if they're arriving here in Canada. This information is powerful because this technology can be used in our communities and it can be used across the country, and we are only one single source for this. But we're hoping that we can actually help to influence all of the data that is being collected within the communities, help these technologies be used more broadly, and of course help our government on policy and decision making. So we're pretty excited about this. This is going to be a 6-month trial being done right here at the airport, and it's going to start in the next couple of weeks. So another pilot project that we are working on. Next slide, please. This one here is a very interesting tech. Right from the beginning, as I said, we took a leadership position. We were looking not only good ways to clean our facilities or to clean our air, but how do we find technology and how can we work with these technology providers to advance their platforms? Early days, there was no testing. If you think back, there was no ability to test a human being. Now, if you fast forward, you know, you've got all these different antigen tests and PCR tests that people can use and rapid 30-minute tests. This technology was very rudimentary, but we saw some light, no pun intended, when you learn how this works. We did see some light at the end of the tunnel on this one, and the GTA got behind it and worked with this company. This technology is really very different than anything you would see today. You can see in the upper picture there that someone has their finger sitting on that chrome plate. This actually has an infrared light that shines through your fingertip and measures the changes in the analytes in your body, your blood. It is non-invasive. It takes 20 to 30 seconds to get a full result. It is cost effective. And again, as we think about what the future state looks like for not only COVID, but for other infectious diseases, this is the type of technology that we want to get behind. It can make a difference. So it is in for Health Canada approval, and it currently has the sensitivity that is equivalent to the best antigen tests on the market. But if you think about something like this, we have the mandatory random testing where 1,900 people a day go to a lab to get tested. You know, this could eliminate 1,800 people from having to go there, or it could be something that's much more rapid for them if they did have to go there. The interesting part about this technology, and you know, it's for another day, but again, it's really cool that the GTA saw the light and said, hey, we really want to be part of this. This technology has the ability for other things, such as THC, and actually advancing to detecting cancer. So there's a lot of cool things that are going on with this, and we're really happy that we got behind it. But again, we look at this from a biosurveillance perspective and never going back to what was actually happening. So between wastewater and technological solutions like this, we think there's a huge advantage. Next slide, please. This is my final slide, I promise you. The GTAA is now an IEC member, so an Innovation Economy Council member, alongside a number of great organizations that you can see there. On September 7th, we participated in a session where we brought scientists and public health experts together. And we had some really great conversations about travel-related public health measures, what's happening, what happened, what should be happening, and lessons learned. And I felt personally that it was a fantastic conversation, and it really brought a lot of the diverging mindsets together to really to speak out in a confidential manner. And I think what we have taken out of that, and as well as many others, is the airport is really a great place to use innovation to help our Canadian government help control infectious diseases. And some of this technology that I've spoken about previously can be utilized to do that. So my final statement, I've used it a lot throughout this. We are taking a leadership position. We will continue to leverage technology. We will continue to work with these platform developers and providers to really help create what the airport of the future can be. So thank you very much. And I'm happy to take any questions.
Great. Thanks, Michael. And thanks, Duane. There was a lot in both of your presentations. So I'll turn it to the floor and see if anyone has any questions for either Michael or Duane. Jonathan, I see your hands up. Go ahead.
Thanks, Laura. So I have a question for Duane. Again, as Laura mentioned, quite a bit of information, very, very impressive, and makes you really sit back and go, wow, what happens behind the scenes to keep us safe? So thanks for that. One question, as you talked about the different technology that's being leveraged, and you know, you started with Blue Dot and you've talked about some of the others. Blue Dot is Canadian, if I remember correctly. So, you know, I wonder, for some of the other technologies, are we involving, or, you know, throughout your process of evaluating technology and identifying technology providers, is there any effort being put into giving, and I'm going to use this word, knowing that we have to be careful, but preferential treatment to Canadian companies, you know, technology developers? Is there a way that they are getting their technology showcased? Because we've got some really good ideas here. So what's that process like?
Fantastic question. And that's a real easy answer. Everything I said to you was Canadian tech. That's what makes it even much more impressive, right? So working with the National Research Council of Canada, their role is to try and get Canadian tech into the market. So everything that we do with them is Canadian, and we're happy to support that, really happy to get behind that. Even the iceberg technology, which is something that you would not expect to see in Canada, really, you'd expect to see that coming out of Europe or somewhere else, that is Canadian technology. And that was also supported through, although it didn't originally start there, NRC got behind that and also supported its development through funding. The provincial government developed or provided some support as well for funding. So everything that we're doing that I spoke to you about today is Canadian tech.
So that's very exciting. So the other follow-up question I have, and maybe I should know this, and apologies if I'm totally in the dark, but are we celebrating this big time? You know, or how are we celebrating this, you know, so that people realize that, hey, we're in this and we're making a difference?
I'll let Lori chime in on this, but what I can say from my perspective is I get invited a lot to talk about the tech that we're using at the airport, and there's a reason why. Not only are we proud of it, we think it can make a difference, and we're also supporting those Canadian companies in their growth journey, right? So I talk about this stuff everywhere and to everyone. I've had the great fortune right from the beginning of developing these relationships out through our National Research Council partnership, as well as direct partnerships with these organizations. And, you know, it's a pretty exciting journey to watch a lot of them grow. And so I, from my perspective, I stand on the mountaintops and scream quite high, but I'll let Lori chime in on that.
Yeah, there's been a few things that we've done, and then there's more being planned. So a couple of the articles that Faraz mentioned in the newsletter talk about innovation in tech. One of them is on wastewater. We do have that IEC roundtable that was put together, the Innovation Economy Council roundtable of the scientists. They're going to be producing a paper, and they do what's called a broadcast. So we'll promote that to help educate around that. I mean, fingers crossed, Iceberg gets its Health Canada approvals. So we'll make sure there's a good, you know, press release, news release around that. And I mean, I think the story that you kind of were just, as you were talking about it, you know, all together, like I think maybe we're piecemealing this a little, but all together, there's a really great homegrown, made in Canada tech story there that I think I'm going to take away and see if we can pitch something along that front, because you're right. It is great to celebrate. And we know that our colleagues at NRC are behind us there. And I know they like to make sure they're promoting those Canadian companies as well. So, yeah. And you know what? If we can make sure that we're sharing the stuff with you, if you have platforms within your distributions, your own sort of, you know, with newsletters that you have that you share with your members or your stakeholders, if you'd like some help putting together materials, articles, you name it, let us know, and we're happy to support that as well, so we can tell the story.
Absolutely, thanks, Laurie, and thanks, Duane. Again, you know, great information. Thanks, and Michael.
Sabir, I see your hands up.
Yeah, thank you, Laurie, and Duane. Excellent presentation, and I agree with Jonathan that there's so much things that you're doing in the background to keep us safe. So thank you very much for that. One of my quick question is regarding the HVAC system.
Which one?
The HVAC system. HVAC system, so the the system that you are employing so that it's killing the germs instantly. So is this HVAC system very expensive, and some of the changes are we making it will be permanent?
So at the great question, thank you. So at the beginning phases of this, as I said, we had to look at two things, the surface cleaning and air. We didn't know which one was better than the other, but I think as we educated ourselves through the pandemic, we recognized very clearly that COVID is moving through the air, and that's obviously how we are getting infected. We made the bold move to say we're going to take both on, and we implemented in our high density areas, we implemented the UV technology and the HVAC system. It is extremely expensive. There is no question. It is there. That's not a trial. That is in the facility. It has been there for well over a year, maybe a year and a half now. But it is in all of those high volume areas. In some of our smaller spaces where it didn't make sense to install a permanent fixture of UVC, we put in a portable system. So smaller rooms, we would put in portable UV systems to ensure that we were still getting that air cleaning in the space. So these are the one that I spoke to is a permanent fixture. It is there. It is not a trial. The other ones would be a trial and innovation, which would be the air quality management and system and the other HVAC system components we were looking at with the electrical filtration. So those ones would be things that we'd be looking to trial, but the UV is there today.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Okay, thanks, Sabir. Stephen, you're next.
Yeah, thank you very much to Duane and Michael. That was very useful and a very, very long and very comprehensive shopping list of the technologies that you're looking at. I guess I have two questions. One is that, what's the timeline for implementation for some of these things? Are we looking at months? Are we looking at years before they're implemented? You've already talked about the costs. And second, my second point is, these are very much technological solutions really based in capital. They're not necessarily socio-technological solutions. And that's one of the things that if we're going to fight pandemics at airports and make things a little bit better for people, something we have to look at. The easiest thing we can do at airports to limit exposure to people with COVID and control the disease is to move them through the airports faster. So they're not standing in long lines next to people for 3 hours breathing each other's air. Those are the kind of socio-technological solutions we have to look at and that we've been talking about. You know, there's a lot of enthusiasm for these technologies. The articles published in The Star by David Patterson, I don't know what the exact relationship is between GTAA and Mars and how maybe Lori can talk about that partnership a little bit. I'd be happy to debate David Patterson in public about the limits of technological solutions as being proposed by the airline jet travel industry. The ITF is doing a great deal of work on this, but they're looking at not just technological solutions, but socio-technological solutions. And I think that's what I'd like to hear a little bit more about is what kind of things are being thought of when it comes to reorganizing the industry. If people are stuck in the baggage terminal of Pearson for 3 hours because there's not enough baggage handlers to offload planes quick enough, that creates a system where you're going to spread COVID. All right. So these are the kind of things that I think I'm a little bit, I was disappointed last meeting. And I voiced those concerns. Lori, I think you left early last meeting. I just want to put that on the record. There's a lot of extra wonderful writing and editorials on this as well in the Toronto Star. I've written one in June, probably the best newspaper article talking about the challenges to the airline industry in Canada was written by Richard Warnicka of the Star. It was a weekend feature. I think that should have been maybe circulated to the committee. Happy to do that. July 22nd article, very long. But I think this is my only comment. But I thank you for all the work you've done, because that is quite an impressive list of that one perspective of capital solutions and technological enhancements. Thanks.
Yeah, maybe I'll just jump in because I think Michael's presentation covers exactly what you're speaking to. So while Duane's is some of the capital and the tech that's being used to help understand the virus and help prevent and protect us from the spread of the virus, foundationally, the submission that we made to the Prime Minister's workforce or our services task force is workforce issues need to be addressed. And the challenge of making sure that our agencies are properly resourced, making sure that we have a process for getting our RAKE system up and running so that people can get onto the job faster, this idea of a RAKE-ready pool. So workforce is a foundational piece to this, and then many of the other items relate to flow. And how do we make sure that we're moving people through the airport efficiently, whether they're arriving from an international destination, departing through check-in and pre-board screening and taking advantage of a trusted traveler program and their Nexus cards. So I think that's where much of what you've talked about would land, would be in that first part. And so I sort of encourage you to take a closer look at that, and I'm happy to share more details on it. And absolutely, apologies, we should have circulated that Star article to the group, and we'll do that following the meeting for sure. Duane, some of the tech that you talked about is already in place. Some of it's trials that, you know, if it works, will be moved into operations. So that's kind of a bit of a mixed bag.
Yeah, I just sort of add to that, and thanks, Lori, for going through that. And I agree with you that there's the employee part of it is key to this. And this stuff here that we're talking about augments the environment and augments the employees. So if you think about Blue Dot and Particle One, they are actually being, Blue Dot's been in the works for a year and a half. Particle One is actually being implemented. Again, the kickoff meeting was today. When you think of Iceberg, it's with Health Canada, and we're hoping to see that, you know, within weeks, months. Wastewater, it's live. It's happening as we speak. So we are doing that testing. And again, these things, to your point, help to influence the regulators to say there's alternative ways to do surveillance when we're looking for, is COVID coming into our country? What is this COVID? Is it, you know, an old one that is meaningless, or is a new one that is morphed and looks very different? So this technology and that human aspect that Michael talked about, they go hand in hand in really trying to create not only a safer environment, but a more efficient environment and moving people through in a timely manner. And although we have tech, we still need the people behind it. So I think the combination, if you look at it like Lori said, the two really complement one another. And it is important. So thanks.
Any questions from any other committee members? Okay, not seeing any hands. Michael, Duane, thank you very much for your time. That was great. We'll make sure the deck is shared with everybody and make sure that article is circulated as well, Stephen.
Awesome. Thanks for having me.
All right. Thanks, Duane. Take care. Ingrid, do we have our other presenters on the line? Oh, there's Craig. Okay. Hi, Craig. Hi, Rizal. How are you two today?
I'm very well. Thank you.
Maybe what I'll just do is do another introduction just to remind folks, because I don't think you were online when we started our meeting today. So with us today, we're going to have a presentation on the Climate Economy Strategy Council, Toronto Pearson Hydrogen Hub Lighthouse Project. That's a big mouthful. So Rizal Martino is Vice President of Public Policy at the Toronto Region Board of Trade, and Craig Rutten is Policy Director, Toronto Region Board of Trade. And as I mentioned, Todd Ernst is our Director of Aviation Infrastructure, Energy and Environment, and is the lead for us internally on the Hydrogen Hub project. So we do have some slides that Craig and Rizal will toss to you to kick off. And then, so you're gonna share the screen. All right, over to you too. Thank you.
Great, thanks so much. And thanks for having us, we really appreciate it. So I'm Rizal Martino, as Rory said, and I'm the Vice President of Public Policy here at the Toronto Region Board of Trade. I'm going to turn to Craig and Todd. We'll do most of this presentation, but just to set the table a bit for everybody on this call, the Climate Economy Strategic Council is a strategic priority, if you will, for the Board of Trade. This council is co-chaired by Jan De Silva, our CEO, and Young Wu, the CEO of MARS. And I'll get into this. Craig will go through, you know, the purpose and some of the details of the council. But really to say that this has really evolved to be, you know, quite a longer term piece of work as it unfolds, not just because the issue of climate economy is so complex and significant, but really, when Jan and Young convened this very high caliber group of people, which again Craig will go through with for you in just a minute, it was really about not just convening them for the sake of convening them and coming to meet for the sake of meeting. We really wanted to find the right space in the climate economy, you know, space, to use that word again, to make an, you know, where can we make an impact? Where is there real gaps? Because everybody and their, you know, aunt and uncle are talking about climate and doing work in climate, but, you know, where does it make sense in terms of from a business perspective, from an innovation and harnessing technology, and how do you, you know, what is that path to meet emissions targets, etc. But how do you do that in a really meaningful way? What are the places that there's not so much noise and we can actually drill down and harness the wisdom and expertise and experience from a number of different members on the council, and then that extends outside of that, you know, the different parts of work that we're embarking on to actually make an impact for our region. And with a, you know, with the view of business growth and competitiveness, and that real, you know, business perspective. So that was the kind of etiology, if you will, of the Climate Economy Strategic Council. It has really, as I said, we started out with three meetings, and it's actually going to be more than that once we kind of unpacked the scope of work that we're going to be doing. As you'll hear very shortly from Todd, the GTAA have been just fantastic partners, and one of their initiatives, the Hydrogen Hub, is in fact a lighthouse project that the council is supporting and really trying to enable and facilitate happening and moving forward. So I will stop and turn over to Craig, but so thanks very much for having us. Really appreciate it.
Yes, thank you so much. Thanks, Rizal. Hello, everyone. Pleasure to be with you and get to speak to this really exciting project. So wanted to just start with a couple of slides of context. obviously, reducing emissions is one of the critical challenges that we all face, not only as a region, but also as a global community, of really trying to reduce our emissions in as fast a way as we can to minimize our impact on the climate, while also working to see how we can maintain as much of our economic activity as possible, and really try and balance these two pieces at the same time. So this slide speaks to the current carbon footprint that we have as a region, with data collected by the Atmospheric Fund. You can see the sources of emissions, that buildings really leads the way, followed by transportation and industry. But we don't only face challenges as a region, we also face opportunities. This includes the global clean tech market of solutions that are going to be needed to help tackle these challenges. It includes the investments that are going to be required as part of that, calculated at more than $9 trillion per year. And that's a flip side of a coin. That's $9 trillion in costs for somebody to bear, but that's also $9 trillion in investments that need to be made. And if we look at the other side of the coin, the cost challenges of not taking these actions and what that impact would mean, as climate disasters, floods, wildfires get worse, there's clearly a need to make these investments, and someone's going to need to produce the technology and solutions that that fuel those improvements. And we're well placed, as you see on the right hand side. There are 13 different Canadian companies that are included on the latest list of the Global Clean Tech 100 leaders. So we are definitely overweight in terms of our innovators and our companies who are well placed and primed to seize these market opportunities. Which is one of the main reasons why we, together with MARS, convened the Climate Economy Strategic Council. And this was established earlier this year. As Roselle mentioned, we've had three meetings so far, and thus far we've drawn in a great range of companies from across the region who have various roles and perspectives to play, notable individuals, leaders from these different companies, and people who can bring a variety of sector perspectives to help inform how we move forward as a region. The next slide speaks to what we're trying to solve for as a group, which is the clean tech adoption necessary for the Toronto region to lead in the climate economy and reach net zero by 2050. And that's really key, that it's both pieces of that equation. We want to make sure that we're picking solutions and identifying the ways that we can, as a region, get our emissions down to net zero. And at the same time, we want our region to be the leaders there. There are a lot of innovators here, and they need opportunities to get footholds, to grow their technology, to prove that it's working. And that can then create the pathways to global export and scale opportunities. And so that's why we've identified a few of the potential levers at our disposal. That includes pilot projects. It includes influencing policy to help improve opportunities for this deployment. Regulations are another piece of that puzzle. And finally, investment and the money needed to make these projects happen. And so that's why we've stood up this strategic council. And as we dove into it, we realized there was so much work to do that we really needed to streamline it through a number of different streams of work. And so that's why you see this structure here of lighthouse projects and enablement working groups. I'll let Todd speak in greater detail to the hydrogen hub at Pearson as the lead for it. It's a really exciting project. But the overarching thinking was, the Strategic Council said, we want to be really focused on a couple of projects that draw together some of these different technologies and challenges in one very specific place. And if we can be a support group for that to help solve for these challenges at both the airport and at the University of Toronto, as two of the projects that we've picked, then we can gather learnings from that and really have the opportunity to share that out more broadly and help inspire more followership and create really the playbook and the guide that other organizations could follow in those footsteps. So speaking about the University of Toronto pilot project, earlier this year, they managed to secure a $56 million investment from the Canada Infrastructure Bank for what they call Project Leap. It's a number of different projects on their St. George campus. It includes thermal energy, battery storage, renewable gas, advanced energy management. And this project alone will reduce their campus emissions by more than 50%. And so it's a really exciting project, and where we see the Strategic Council playing a role is in helping to connect them and the companies that they're working with to deliver that project with the innovators that are based in the region to see if there are opportunities for their technologies to be incorporated into that. And because this project only tackles 50% of their emissions, there's still another big piece of the pie. And so we are standing by to support and see what other opportunities we might have to help them think through and access financing for those projects, or connect with innovators and other companies in the local economy to help deliver those initiatives. You'll also see on the right-hand side four different enablement working groups, because in addition to these site-specific projects, there are a number of challenges that we knew needed to be tackled. And that includes financial innovation and really thinking through how to harness and unlock the capital that is ready and waiting to be deployed, but might require some new structures or some different approaches and ways of thinking of connecting that money with the projects that need to happen. There's also a focus we have, having just moved down to our new office at 100 Queens Quay East, on the downtown Toronto waterfront. So we've been working with Waterfront Toronto, who also sit on the Strategic Council, to think through ways of connecting innovators with the developers they have, particularly at the Quayside and in the future at the Villiers Island locations, to see what opportunities might exist to plug those innovators into those building developers and get some of that building tech being used right here at home, and creating those, again, pathways and opportunities for it to scale. And then the other two pieces you see here, clearly our electricity grid is going to be the backbone of many efforts to decarbonize. And so we want to make sure we're taking a laser focus to understanding what the implications of that are, the need to grow our clean generation in order to meet these needs, and to ensure that we're planning the redesign and the significant expansion of our electricity system in a really smart and cost-effective way. And on new transit technology, we think there's a lot of opportunities out there to really think differently about how we move people around in a low carbon way, and ideally a zero carbon way. And so that's a place where we want to explore what those technologies might look like and where it might make the most sense for them to be used. And so at the end of the presentation, I know we'll have time for discussion and questions, and happy to speak about any of these in greater detail. But for now, I'd love to turn it over to you, Todd, to speak more on the Toronto Pearson Hydrogen Hub.
Sure. Thanks a lot, Craig. Good afternoon, all. I'll talk a little bit about the objective of the hub on this slide, and then I'll get into why at Toronto Pearson, and you know, what some of the end uses and you know, the ultimate objective of having hydrogen is. This project really is about identifying the concept for bringing hydrogen to Toronto Pearson. We want to identify, you know, what are the technologies that make sense given the constraints and also opportunities that we have on site with the what is the available energy, what are the available stock that we can use to make hydrogen. Generally speaking, hydrogen is produced using water or methane, and we've got both available in fairly significant quantities at our central utilities plant. Also very importantly, we need to make sure that we have a market for what we're producing or distributing at Toronto Pearson. What are those potential end users over the long term? Stealing from the next slide, hydrogen powered flight is the ultimate kind of end goal that we want to future proof ourselves against. There are a number of other end uses for hydrogen at various stages of maturity, and we want to make sure that whatever we propose as a concept for a hydrogen hub, we've got a good match between what we're distributing and or producing, and what the actual available end uses for that that hydrogen is. Finally, the last two points we're on the potential use slide now. But we are also looking at the financing alternatives available for hydrogen as well. So in terms of the potential uses, what are the end uses that we can use hydrogen for? Ground transportation vehicles is a fairly straightforward one, probably one of the nearer term available uses. And just, you know, the general rule that I've been learning as we've been on this journey is that because, you know, I've been a big fan of electrification. Craig talked about, the need for electrification on the path to net zero. And battery electric plays an important part. And battery electric is good at a lot of different things. And then hydrogen is very good at a lot of things that battery electric is not, and vice versa. So there's definitely going to be a role for both. Generally speaking, if it runs on diesel, it's probably a good candidate for hydrogen. And if it runs on gasoline, it's probably a good candidate for battery electric. So that's kind of how we looked at these potential end uses. So that's the view to ground transportation vehicles, passenger buses, ground service vehicles that would typically run on diesel, looking at what's the potential magnitude of use for converting those to hydrogen, backup generation at the airport. You know, in addition to the cogen, we have a large number of life safety generators that are good candidates for converting to hydrogen. We have, of course, our external partners have a myriad of different needs, ranging from hotel shuttles, taxi and limo fleets, which are great candidates for hydrogen because it's a return to base type of operation where the need to be able to run for a fairly long period of time, longer range than maybe a battery can provide, and then come back to the base fueling station. And the airline ground service equipment, much of which is going electric, but we are finding that we've got bottlenecks in our electric distribution system that hydrogen can help to address also. Other end uses external to the airport property, external distribution and logistics, so for trucking fleets, warehouse vehicles. And when you get into warehousing, the example that comes to mind for me is Canadian Tire. You know, their largest warehouse is very close to Toronto Pearson, and they have converted their forklift fleet to hydrogen as part of their green efforts. They are fortunate that they have the size and scale at that warehouse that they can produce their own. But there are a lot of warehouse facilities around Toronto Pearson in that employment zone, which is the second largest employment zone in Canada, that do not quite have that scale to be able to produce their own. So that's where Toronto Pearson could potentially play a role with any excess production that we have to supply those needs. And then I mentioned sustainable aviation fuel or hydrogen powered aircraft as the big one in the future. That's more likely to be 2030 or post 2030 for the technology to start to mature. The very first conversion kits, I guess you could call them, for small hydrogen aircraft do exist. They haven't really come into market here in Ontario yet, but at some point, both sustainable aviation fuel and hydrogen powered aircraft are going to be coming to Pearson. So, getting our feet wet with these other applications at a smaller scale helps to give us the experience and the potential to scale up. And hydrogen production technology is fairly readily scalable, for good luck. So the next slide. In terms of the progress and where we're at, why Toronto Pearson? There was a roundtable that the Toronto Board of Trade hosted for us, and I think it was a very successful session, very informative. It confirmed a few things and shed some light on others. And, the key takeaways from that was that, our location really does situate Toronto Pearson as an ideal location for a hydrogen hub. Ultimately, the hydrogen ecosystem is going to involve a number of distributed hubs across Ontario to successfully serve the market. And our location like I said, near many end users and also directly connected to the 400 series highways, where we've got over a million passenger vehicles passing the airport every single day. You know, creates a great opportunity and a great geographic advantage for hydrogen at Toronto Pearson. The production and procurement matching I talked about already, and that's going to be the key challenge, is making sure that, you know, we don't go too far too fast on either side of the equation and create an imbalance where either we don't have enough available or there's too much and we're trying to figure out what to do with it. You know, that's the challenge, ramping up any new energy ecosystem, if you will. Like I said, hydrogen technology is scalable, and there are some other end uses that we have that I didn't mention on the prior slide because they're not as necessarily economical. But if we were to err a little too far to one side, for instance, we have a 117 megawatt cogeneration facility on site where a small percentage of hydrogen can be bled into the natural gas feed to help to green the cogen. Not necessarily the most economical use of hydrogen, but it is potentially a tool for us to help balancing supply and demand as we're kind of moving up that curve. I mentioned the financial support that we're going to look to. Lastly, I neglected to mention, as we're developing this concept, we are looking at emerging technologies as well for hydrogen. So we've started with a base case of kind of standard water electrolysis, which is, the most widely accepted and used method, and it may be what we start with. But there are some very interesting emerging technologies, an example of which is microwave pyrolysis. That technology is actually at least partly born out of the University of Toronto. And it's just kind of entering the pilot production phase, where they actually use microwaves to convert methane into hydrogen. And then the carbon in the methane is left behind as carbon black, which is inert and actually saleable as a chemical product as well. So that's an interesting technology that actually uses 1/6 of the electricity that's used by the base case technology. So these are things that we're looking at as part of the concept evaluation to see, you know, what really makes the most sense, and, you know, are there emerging technologies that that are a fit for our location and needs. Sorry, Craig, I'll turn it back to you now.
No, that was perfect. Thanks so much, Todd, and thanks for covering that. So I just want to just close out by talking about our next steps. As Rizal mentioned off the top, we're looking at more than three meetings. We're looking at currently laying out a two-year work plan to really see, you know, what is the tangible progress we can deliver on these lighthouse projects, working with our great partners in the GTAA and the University of Toronto, working with our enablement working groups to really land on the concrete insights and recommended pathways that we can communicate out and share with other interested partners and stakeholders. And finally, producing the actionable playbooks and guides that others will be able to follow, because there's so much need and opportunity for us to act in the region. And we want to be a key connector as part of our role as the local chamber to share those learnings and help others, you know, follow in those footsteps and connect them with the businesses and partners who can help deliver that progress. So with that, I will thank you very much for your time, and we're all here for any questions that the committee might have.
Great. Thanks, Craig, Rizal, and Todd. So I'll open it up to the committee for any questions. I mean, I think when I've been watching us on our path to net zero over the years, there's lots that we've done within our own walls to support that, but we've gotten to a place where I think we have these kinds of bigger leaps that need to be taken. And so it's super exciting to see. I'm not sure I ever thought hydrogen was gonna be something we'd be thinking about this close or this soon, but it's great and exciting to see these technologies being explored, and the thought that we could be on the leading edge of it is really exciting. So Stephen, you've got your hands up.
Yeah, thank you. That's a very interesting and comprehensive presentation. I just need to be brought up to speed a little bit here on some of the politics behind this, because the province announced its low carbon hydrogen strategy in April. Okay. And Pearson wasn't on that list of hubs. Halton Hills was. So can you just explain to me where this fits in with the low carbon hydrogen strategy of the province at all? Because I sort of, maybe I just missed that in your presentation. I apologize if I did.
No, we didn't speak to it directly. So it's a great question. Yeah, as you noted in that strategy, they identified a few places. One, they gave the green light to the Niagara facility with OPG and Natura Power and signaled a couple others that they were interested that, you know, had potential. Halton Hills was on that list, as was Bruce Power, and looking at producing hydrogen there. But they did also have another point in the hydrogen strategy that looked at establishing more hydrogen hubs across the province that wasn't determined by specific geography or location. And so that's why we think that for, you know, for all the reasons we laid out in the presentation, that there is good potential at the GTAA. Particularly, one of the things we've learned through our research on this is the real benefits and need to co-locate production and use, that if you have to transport the hydrogen to get to your end users, you know, that adds a, could add double the cost of the ultimately delivered fuel. And so that's why we think there's real potential here. Of course, it's going to, you know, require the government partners at all three levels to agree with that assessment for it to move forward. So that's why, you know, we're sharing this at a relatively early stage in our process and our thinking, maybe earlier than we normally would. But I think that's sort of the thinking there. And we do see that this, we do think that this has the great potential to align with the provincial hydrogen strategy.
Okay, that's, I mean, just to let you know a little bit of background in my day job, I'm an economic geographer. So location of these things sort of comes up, and I've talked about this in class as well. I mean, there's a, of course, the trade-off here is that you need to have a very cheap power source, right, to produce it. And then you don't want to have to, of course, transport it a long way. Mm-hmm. Ideally, yeah, both. You've talked about the microwave technology as one way of addressing that. That's the, I guess, just one of my questions. I mean, maybe I'll take that offline and ask Lori behind that, of how far away are we from this, of making this a reasonable and a likable or eventual hub at Pearson, because the politics of hydrogen production location, you know, you can talk to Todd Smith and Rob Ford all day. There's a lot of people knocking on their doors to locate hydrogen productive facilities in their neighborhood. There's also a lot of people who don't want them in their neighborhoods. But I think I love these kinds of presentations. I think they're very useful for this committee, but there's some of us here who need a little bit more of to know where we are in the timeline of things. So when we go back and report to people who want to know, we can actually say things. But it's a very, very good presentation. Thank you.
I have something to add, but Todd, do you want to say something? Sorry,
I just wanted to add that, you know, scalability, I think, is our friend here. Yeah. And the fact that we do have a, you know, some captive end uses on the airport site. So, you know, we may not necessarily start full blown hub with, you know, massive amounts of hydrogen going external to the airport, but, you know, plant the seed in terms of having a small pilot facility to serve our own needs as a starting point, and have that available to scale however the market evolves, and then ultimately towards, you know, hydrogen and SAF powered flight.
Okay. Thank you.
And sorry, just to respond to fair and great question, Stephen. Obviously, all of you have your own, you know, sophisticated arms in which you connect with the provincial government, as do we. Not only did Craig have the energy portfolio in the government in a previous life, so we do connect quite regularly with Minister Smith and David Donovan, who's Minister Smith's chief of staff. But one thing that the government does often come to the board, and not because we're anything special, but rather they often get lobbied, or to your point, you can talk to, I don't think they'd be talking to Rob Ford, but definitely Doug Ford and Minister Smith on a regular basis. Yeah. I mean, if you're talking to Rob Ford, I would be really concerned about that. And you know, that would be another conversation. But for Minister Smith, yes, absolutely. But they get lobbied by by individuals or individual organizations. And what they'll often come to the board about is, what's that cross-sectoral view? You know, what is that business, that economic lens, that cross-sectoral view is often what they'll come to kind of vet by us or talk to us about. So, and that was one of the things that really what we used to inform why we held the roundtable, as Todd mentioned, because it was really getting insights from a number of different leaders and experts, you know, in this space, to really understand what are those pain points, what are those opportunities, what are those challenges. What are those facilitators? Like, what are the kinds of things that need to happen? Because those are exactly the questions that when this, it's, I don't think it's a matter of if, I think so when, you know, this initiative and the GTAA with and being enabled by or catapulted by the council, as an example, you know, go to whatever level of government, they are armed with that ballast. They have that information, and we, you know, we really are understanding what is it that the government's looking for, would be looking for. And one thing that I this is not a secret, and I'm not going to speak to it in detail because, again, Lori and Todd can do a far better job. But certainly at the council, GTA CEO Deborah Flint spoke about funding is also a really important element of this, right? So, you know, it's not, you know, what is it? Like, what, how does this have to be designed? How, you know, what does it have to look like in order to achieve various bits of funding? So anyway, just to say, fair question. And we looked for alignment, as Craig said, with the hydrogen strategy for the province, and also, you know, look to unpack where those gaps or those kinds of criteria, if you will, that the province would be looking for, and not just the province, but federally and locally as well. So just a bit of context about a fair question, and we're on it.
Okay. Thank you very much. That's a fair answer.
Yeah. Thank you.
Any other questions for Todd or Craig or Roselle? Okay. So thank you very much for your time today. Craig and Roselle, Todd, you're welcome to stay, but I know it is 5:30 almost on a Tuesday night, so please do feel free to take your leave. We've got a couple of other items on our agenda. Okay, we appreciate
thank
you,
so
you taking
much.
The time.
Thanks
thank
a
lot
you. For
Good
having
night.
Us.
Take care.
Bye all.
So that moves us to our member update. I am just going to go to my, I don't have everyone on the screen, so I think the easiest way for me to do this is just to go through the Teams list, and it shows up alphabetically. So Aylin, you do show up first, so I'll toss it to you, and if we can try and go through quick updates by members, that would be great.
Great, thank you. Hopefully you can hear me. I have a temperamental team system today. Hi, everyone. It's good to see you all, and I hope you had a great summer. I have a couple of quick updates from the Toronto Region Board of Trade. The first is that they have just launched the It Go campaign, which is in the run-up to the October 24th municipal elections in the city. They'll be exploring 5 main asks. The first is think like a region. Second is to accelerate transportation. Build more housing is the third. The fourth is to support local technology. And the fifth is to cut red tape. And more information and detail on that campaign is available on their website. They will also be kicking off their policy fiscal year, as they refer to it, with a policy priority setting session taking place on October the 11th. So that's relevant to all members. This will be a half day working session with a fireside chat with their CEO and some speakers, followed by a deeper dive with members splitting out into committees to activate their 2 priority pillars of business growth and competitive region. So those are the two main updates from the Board of Trade.
Great, thanks, Aylin. Brad Butt, Mississauga Board of Trade, next.
Thanks very much, Lori. Just a couple of quick things. We are hosting the 6 Mississauga MPPs for a breakfast event on Friday, September 30th. course, we also found out that's Truth and Reconciliation Day, but that's not a provincial holiday, so we're still going to move ahead despite the conflict with that very important day. Second is we will be hosting an all-day human talent acquisition and management day on November the 30th at the International Center. So I'm sure TTAA will be happy with our choice of venue. And we're looking forward to that being a really important discussion and some experts, others talking about this whole challenge that we're all talking about around labor and human resources and those other challenges to us. So we're looking forward to those two specific events. And of course, the last one is, of course, our municipal election, which of course we're running into now between now and October the 24th. So the Mississauga Board of Trade will be monitoring that. I will be taking a leave because I'm in that. I'll look forward to seeing all of you at the next meeting because that will be occurring after the election is over, win, lose, or draw for me and others. So we'll look forward to seeing you all then.
Thanks, Brett, and we do wish you all the best. Anyone who puts their head up into the ring for public office, we have to applaud. So thank you for doing that. Who do I have next? Sabir, Region Appeal. Sabir, are you still with us?
Yeah, I'm here.
Yeah, okay. Looking for the button.
Thank you, Laurie. From the Region Appeal, we are only, I think, one or two updates. We will be conducting our comprehensive transportation master plan. So we will be looking at various components. So currently we do have a plan up to 2041, but now we will be planning up to 2051. And as you can see, some of our municipalities are growing faster. There's a lot of population and employment allocation that has happened through our official plan exercises. So we will be conducting a 2051 scenario analysis as well. And goods movement is an important component, as well as transit is an important component of our transportation master plan. Next, we will be holding a Smart Fare Center event sometime in November. So we will be extending you an invitation as well for the Smart Fare Center. Those are the two updates, Laurie, from me. Thank you.
Yeah, you're muted.
It has to happen once in a meeting, doesn't it? Shane, did you read my lips? It was you, Shane Raymond.
Sorry, I didn't read your lips. Okay. As a Toronto resident, no huge updates. One thing that crossed my mind in the presentations that I could bring up, when we're talking about controlling future exposure to disease at the airport and through air transportation, I was just wondering if the airport or airports in general have considered trying to change not just a bit of the technology, but the overall North American mentality, where if you're sick and you know you're contagious, maybe you don't get on a plane. And maybe you realize that's not a nice thing to do to other people. Because I do know in some cultures, you don't do that. And in North American culture, well, you got a non-refundable plane ticket. So what do you do? And I wonder if, I'm not saying there should be, I don't think it's my place to say, but I do wonder, has there ever been any thoughts on maybe part of the way to change the way we control contagious diseases is to gradually change people's conduct so they're a little bit more courteous and caring of other people around them? Sorry to give instead of a comment, a question, but it was
question.
When I heard the presentation, That's what I was thinking.
I kind of feel like people's behaviors have changed. I felt like we have a culture that, you know, you struggled on through when you were sick and you got the badge of honor when you still came to work sniffling and sneezing and, you know, we didn't think too much about getting our colleagues sick. But I feel like that culture has shifted, and that has been a shift in the course of the pandemic, that you do stay home if you're sick. I mean, there were rules about it. There's checklists about it. You know, you're asked all sorts of questions before you enter buildings and in air travel as well, in terms of, are you, you know, do you feel well? Do you have a cough? So it feels to me like that's in people's psyche. Airlines were providing refunds to travelers who were having to cancel their trips if they were feeling unwell. I'm not sure all those policies exist today anymore to the same extent. But it is a pretty deep philosophical question around behavior.
I found there was a very positive shift in favor of it, and I thought it might be permanent. And in the past few months, I've seen it recede in a way that I mean, again, it's not my place to say, but I thought it might be a permanent shift. And I'm beginning to think this might have been a very temporary shift, but just something to give thought to, because it might make air travel and aviation safer in the future. And I personally, I don't wear a mask everywhere now, but I'm pretty sure for the rest of my life, I'll wear a mask on a plane.
Even though the transmission of COVID on aircraft is nil.
It's not just COVID. It's everything else.
I'd wear a mask in Costco before I'd worry about it on a plane.
Yeah, that's fair too. Okay, thank you.
Not to denigrate poor Costco, but thanks for that. Stephen Tufts, updates from you.
Thanks, everyone. Not too much more to update or change from the last meeting. Labor shortages are still an issue in the airport in many jurisdictions. A lot of economists are debating of whether or not it's structural or this is generational, or a combination of both. We still don't have a full accounting yet. But to get to some of these questions, we are taking part in an ITF campaign, which is about raising standards and trying to attract people back to the industry, because the labor shortages in air travel is a global phenomenon. It's just not being experienced in Pearson, but it is very acute here. Other jurisdictions don't have a similar issue. But of course, other jurisdictions don't have airlines that oversold their planes by 20% then canceled the flights in the summer. So that's one thing that's a bit different here as well. They can manage their labor shortage a little bit better. The second campaign that we're doing, which is sort of related to the environmental climate change initiative that was presented today, is that with the ITF, we're actually starting to have discussions with airline workers of what is a new normal like, and what does climate change and what would a reduced airline industry look like, or air travel industry? What is just transition for workers who are displaced from air travel if we go to a system, for example, of air rationing, or where we just don't fly as much as we used to, or if we don't have the same 2019 trajectory of growth that we had for the sector as a whole? And that's really interesting, because there's some hard discussions that are being had, but it's actually quite beneficial of what a new normal would be if people aren't flying as much as they did in the future. So I think for that, I'll just leave it there.
Yeah, are those items that we could perhaps put on our agenda, and have you come in and share more details?
Yeah, as they develop, there's actually a person who seconded to the ITF right now is working with workers on the just transition question. That's more of an educational. But some of the things I can present is what a healthy airport, or what some of the answers and solutions that labor provide for our current state we're in at the airport aren't necessarily only regulatory or technological. We have other proposals that we're thinking of. Just transition strategies is one of them.
That'd be great. Thank you. We'll keep in touch in terms of getting that on the next agenda if that timing works out. Next is Jonathan. You're up next. Jonathan Weedle from New York Region.
Thanks, Laurie. So Interesting comment from Stephen there when it comes to labor and talent issues, because it's something that is so pervasive everywhere you turn, you know, and you have that juxtaposition of businesses saying we can't find talent and talent saying we can't find work. So that's an interesting thing that everybody's keeping an eye on. But as far as my update goes, there are two things that I want to provide an update on. One is the presence that we had at Collision 2022, which happened earlier this year in June. I think this is our first meeting since then. It was very successful for us, York Region, our presence there with our local municipalities and businesses. And at that time, we had the opportunity to have collaborate with the both business leaders, where there was announcements of over $250 million in business-related investments across York Region, which will be leading to over 800 jobs in 5 years. So that was really exciting for us to have in and amongst the doom and gloom of what we were hearing at the time. You know, certainly, which was strange, but for the tech sector, the layoffs, that the slowdown in hiring and layoffs, and then in the midst of that, we had these announcements coming forward. So that was a good presence for us. And then secondly, as I believe was mentioned earlier, that our transportation master plan. So York Region is, we're doing our transportation master plan. Actually, it's the, I got an update from my colleagues here, so let me get this correctly. Our transportation master plan is reviewed every 5 years to ensure that the transportation network meets the needs of motorists, pedestrians, cyclists, and other transit users and transit riders. And our 2022 master plan was endorsed in principle by regional council. And now the 30-day public review period is over, and it will be in front of regional council on September 29th. So we're really looking forward to seeing what council says there. But one thing that I think is relevant for the for us here is that the transportation master plan does acknowledge and advocate for connections to Pearson Airport. So it's a part of the plan.
Very good news to hear. Thank you. We'll have to take a look at that.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I think I've gone through all the voting members. Ingrid, did I miss anyone in terms of voting members? I'll go back through any of our advisory members.
I don't think you did.
All right. So, Alessandra from MTO. I think we have a couple of folks from MTO today.
Hi, everyone. Hi. So, I'd like to say thank you for the presentations. They were really interesting. A lot of good things happening, so that's nice to hear. No updates from my end, though.
Thanks. Good to see you. Christopher Brook.
Hey, Chris Brodkin from Transport Canada here. Thank you also for the presentations. No updates on our end.
There's Brian. I think that covers everyone. I don't think we have anyone from City of Brampton or City of Mississauga, and Badara's had to leave. All right, so we've had quite a few updates from our side. One thing that I wanted to mention is we are working in partnership with some local employment groups to try and help support our own hiring and labor force challenges, but also those of the 400 businesses that operate at Pearson. So there is a job fair coming up that we are supporting, and Michael, it's end of September. I'm just forgotten
the date. It's September 27th.
And where is it being held?
And I can, I'll tell you 1 second, because I just got a note about it. It is at Pearson Works Job Fair at the Sheridan Hotel in Terminal 3 in the Gateway Ballroom. So we can send a note out to committee members. Would appreciate everyone's help to just promote the event. And like I said earlier, lots of good jobs available at the airport. So.
We're also making our rounds, as we always do, in terms of our updates to our nominating municipalities. Obviously, with the municipal election October 24th, that will delay things a little bit. Some of them, I think, will get pushed into next year, but those, we're getting those scheduled. And then the final thing, and maybe we'll do this through a survey, is we've been, you know, quite effectively having our meetings virtually. I think it's good for us to try and plan to get together and see each other, maybe at times when we're, you know, there's something at the airport we can do in terms of a tour. But I'd like to canvass the group to understand people's appetite and interest in having in-person meetings again, whether the preference is to stay in a bit of a hybrid approach, and where'd you like to go with that. So why don't we send that out with the minutes from the meeting and do a bit of a survey and get people's feedback and thoughts. I know for some it's a bit of a trek to come to a meeting at the airport, and it's also a distance. It's also at a time of day that's not easy to get around sometimes in the region. So appreciate that. And Jonathan, you're the only one left in my screen. So in terms of travel, I think you probably have the furthest trip of anyone that's at our meeting today. So I know you might vote virtual.
Yeah.
Thank you, everyone. Michael, did I miss anything for today's meeting?
You got it. I think we're covered.
Awesome. Well, thanks. Good to see everybody. Our next meeting, Ingrid, is when?
Sorry, it's December 6th.
Okay.
Yep.
Oh my gosh, a lifetime away.
I know. I'll send a note out about the job fair tomorrow with the submission to the task force and the presentations.
And the article that Stephen mentioned as well.
And the articles, yes. Yes. I have that noted down too.
Thanks very much.
Thank you.
Take care, everybody. Have a great afternoon. Good to see you. Bye-bye.